You know what I was doing that whole time?
What?
Trying to untangle my damn earbud cords.
You mean the last time we were? Oh, you? Oh,
But
why it took so long to send me the link?
that last 6.5 minutes was me trying to untangle these damn cords. Like,
I've had to deal with that before. Like when your earbuds get tangled, that's like the worst.
that shit is like a sentence from like,
Like, why did this happen?
Sisyphus thing. Like, this is that water everywhere, not a drop to drink. I'm sitting there untangling that purgatory. Like, for the rest of my natural existence, you gotta untangle these.
That should tell.
Old Chinese
I
finger
was
thing.
wondering why it took you so long. That's hilarious.
I was just sitting there. I looked like I was trying to weave a basket. I was just so trash. I felt like, wow, helpless. Like, I just put this loop through that. Hold on. Oh, man.
It's like I just want to know how they get so tangled in the first place.
I didn't do nothing but put them in my pocket and change rooms. All I did was change rooms, walk out. I didn't go far. I didn't move around. They wasn't connected to anything. I put them in my pocket. It's like on the South Park underpants nose. Like, it's somebody that's in my pocket that exists just to fuck up my headphones. And then I reach my hand back in there, they disappear. And they're just like, it looks like somebody scribbled it. Or it
That's
looks
way more plausible than like there being a tooth fairy.
that
You know what I mean? Or
I,
Santa. Like
yeah.
that is way more plausible. That's the idea of that. Independent thoughts that I have. So it made me think, what's in this head of mine? One thing it's always on my brain is my hyper awareness of the diversity of my surroundings. No matter where I'm at, I scan the room and get a sense of the diversity because I know it's easy to navigate the world, especially in the US as a white person, and be in all white spaces, something I don't typically like to do. Another thing on my brain a lot is about gender norms in relationships. I think it's hilarious because it's so confusing. And the funniest thing about it is that people have one foot in 2018 and another foot in 1920. So a lot of times what we want and expect from the opposite sex is very contradictory. Another conundrum I usually find myself in my head is I try not to be very judging of people, but if I call out someone for being judgmental, does that make me judgmental? And finally, do people suck in general or are they good? That's something I have a hard time figuring out because I surround myself by good people. But one look at the comment section on Facebook and I start to question humanity.
This is Independent Thoughts with your host, Wes Norris. This week's thoughts come from Mary Hodges, an attorney, entrepreneur, and fellow podcaster. You'll be joining our conversation already in progress as we discuss things like intellectual property, how to build a lawsuit, race, relationships, and what white people say when people of color aren't around. What is it like blending in with white people when they say something crazy? And I've never known you to be a silent person either. So what's it like being that person? You find yourself in that situation often.
Well, I think the people that know me know I'm not a secret. It's not a secret. I have been in situations before where, I mean, we're talking adults here too. It's like disgusting sometimes. And this doesn't happen to me often because I know I choose, like, the people I choose to hang, to surround myself with are quality people. But in the past, one instance in law school, actually, I was around a group of white people and somebody used the N-word and I fucking had a fit. Like, I made it. It wasn't just like, you really shouldn't say that. I was like, if you ever fucking say that word again, I'm going to slap you. And it was one of those things where it was like, the way I look at it is like, I'm not going to be nice about that. Because there's no reason to be nice about that.
They're like, you have to understand that if you can't say that shit in front of me, I'm the wrong one. So,
have you seen the movie Dope?
I've not.
You gotta see Dope. It's a thing in there. It's a whole thing.
I'll check it out if I have time. But in other circumstances, so it's never, I've not had many situations where it's pervasive. Actually, the most pervasive thing that ever happened in that situation was when I was, I want to say, 17 years old, and I was actually in at my job, and this one kid started using the N-word a lot, and he was doing it to piss me off because some of my friends, they come into to my job to say hi to me, and they happen to be Black. And all of a sudden, after they left, he just kept using the word, and I was like, stop. Like, what the fuck's with you? And the manager at the time was, like, my age, so we were, like, 17, okay?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was, like, he didn't alleviate the situation. So it was busy. I was in customer service. I was working in a food spot. Mm-hmm. The phones were ringing off the hook. I'm the only one there answering them. I said, if you say that word one more time, I'm fucking leaving. Can I cuss on the show, by the way?
I have marked it as explicit.
Okay, cool. I should have asked you that before. I get mad about this stuff, though.
No,
he said it again, and I was like, fuck you, and I looked at my manager, and I said, and fuck you, too, and I walked out. and I just left him with phones ringing, and they had to deal with it. And the next day, like, you know what? And I didn't know enough. I was young. I didn't know enough about, like, how to navigate through something like that. Mm-hmm. Because that's, like, that dude should have been fired. He wasn't fired.
Yeah.
But he was never allowed to work with me again. His shift had to change. My shift stayed the same, but he was never allowed to work when I was working. And like the managers, like, said, I'm really sorry you had to go through that, this and that. But it was like, now that I look back on that, I'm like, that dude should have been fired immediately. You know?
Don't say that shit. I will slap the shit out of you.
No, you won't, because you have been outvoted by your peers.
I'm George W. Bush. I don't give a fuck what the vote says. What the fuck?
Let him say it.
All right, you can say it.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. I really do. I like a nigga with saying, what the fuck?
I was thinking about something today. I was having a conversation where somebody posted this meme. It was like, this woman makes $400,000. She's like a doctor or a surgeon. She paid for the wedding, bought them a new car, paid for their trip to Jamaica, and all her homegirls are hating, telling her that she's stupid for doing all that. And it was like, do you see a problem with it? And right away, I was like, well, who gives a fuck? You know, two grown people, why do other people care about what two other adults are doing in their relationship, especially if they seem happy, right? And then another person brought up the fact that, like, well, given the fact that her friends know all these, like, intimate details about his earnings and her earnings and what she's spending money on, like, their relationship's not going to last because there's too many people in their business. True. And at that point, the conversation then turned from kind of to left field a little bit, and was talking about, well, what point, like, should, and I said women do this more than men in my personal experience, because I have men and women friends. And, you know, women are just raised to believe that their self-worth comes from being married or having a man. So for them, it's like they can't wait to talk to their girls about their man, right?
It's a brag. It's definitely a brag.
Right. And or when they're talking to their girls about something like a challenge or something wrong, they don't seek their friends' advice because they're looking for, like, how they can change their behavior. They're seeking their friends' advice. They're talking to their friends so they can be validated. Hmm. So it's never really constructive in the way, because you know a lot of times you're leaving out crucial facts when you tell what's really going on with you and your man.
Yeah.
You're only, you're telling it from your perspective and not trying to step back from the situation and say, well, I can see how he feels this way, or I can see how I've contributed to this issue by my behavior. You know, it's never that. It's always a he did this. Let's, you know, talk shit about him.
It's totally his fault.
Agree me everything. Yeah, agree with everything I say. And then at that point, you're then, that's not, first of all, not constructive. Second of all, you're then bringing these third parties into, like, details about your relationship that are really meant but for you and him. Like, that type of stuff should be worked out between you guys. And my theory is that if you need to talk to somebody about a challenge in your relationship, go talk to a therapist.
So I do think there's, so there's a lot of stuff that's, I think it's harder for women because they're socialized in such a weird way. Like, a lot of, like, women are socialized to do a lot of the stuff you said, like, hey, I'm going to, you know, I'm rewarded for having a man, which is just a ridiculous notion, versus being rewarded for actually accomplishing something. And then when women do accomplish something, we kind of like minimize it because it's not as big as whatever man she gets. So you're only, and it's really supposed to be you're only as good as the weakest member on your team, male or female, but it winds up being you're only as strong as your male representative. And that's BS. That, you know, I don't care who makes more money. If they, you know, are both bringing something to the table that the other person needs, then that's all that really matters. As far as like other people chiming in on it, that's women also, it sucks, but a lot of women are socialized to like be envious or jealous or talk about that. And it's not that I mean it in the way that so there's going to be a lot of women who I'm not like that. And I'm like, oh, of course you're not like that. But to deny that there's an entire industry, you know, like that goes to, that's ridiculous. Like,
you're anecdotal, basically.
Yeah. There's Keeping Up with the Kardashians. There's Real Housewives. There's Atlanta Housewives. There's Desperate Housewives. There's all these different things. Like, there's a total market just for that. Just so to say that, like, no, that's not a thing. Like, no, that's definitely a thing.
I know we just talked about, you know, women being anecdotal, but I will say that when it comes to that, I know I have a solid group of women friends in my life. And I understand that they're, you know, women, if they have a close relationship with their other female friends, sometimes they want to lean on them for help. And that's understandable to me when it comes to your relationship. The women I know personally, if they're coming to me for advice or to talk, it's not for the validation. It's not to sit there and talk shit about their man. They're coming to me because, number one, they know I'm non-judgmental. And they could, you know, I'm not going to sit there and judge them for some of the choices they make or for how they deal with their relationship. But they're seeking knowledge for real. But I do know a lot of other situations where women aren't looking for that. They're not looking to figure out how they can improve. They're just looking for the validation. And they're looking for the, tell me I'm right.
Yeah.
And I think when you approach it from that type of framework, then you're inviting all those people into your business from a place of like negativity. So now all your girls are going to be looking sideways at your man because of whatever the case may be. And I don't know. I just think a lot of that stuff's better left between the man and the woman.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also, well, at least for you, I mean, if you still got the same friends from college, then it's a little different because they all rich. So it doesn't even matter.
I got friends from all kind of, I'm thinking of all my close, yes, some of them from college, some from law school, some from high school, you know, some that I've made since then.
Don't get me wrong, dudes will sit around and bash chicks all day. That shit's funny. It's funny to like complain about that, but when you're seeking genuine advice, if you are not around a guy who's is very serious and very like, pretty much anybody else in the room who is trustworthy will be like, yeah, you don't need to be having this conversation. Like somebody, the dudes just know. They'd be like, no, oh, we're being serious. And then they'll give you their best opinion Or they'll be like, man, I don't know. I'm just out here playing. I'm out here running game. Okay, well, you know, that's cool. But, like, when it comes to real advice, dudes, you'd be surprised when dudes all of a sudden, like, even if they're, like, clowning, even if they're doing stuff that seems less than savory, you could ask them, and they would know right from wrong. They would be like, oh, yeah, you know, she's a keeper. Now, excuse me, I got 7 chicks that I got to call back.
But do you guys have, like, I guess my question, because I've had some male friends come to me about advice because I'm a woman, so they want a woman's perspective. But I'm always curious what that conversation is like between guys. Like, if a guy's in a relationship, does he talk about his relationship challenges with his guy friends?
It depends on what the challenges are, because so you talk about, like, the male ego, I guess. And I think that is a driving force behind a lot of what gets mentioned and what doesn't, because dudes don't want to be embarrassed ever. So, like, trying to gauge, is this going to potentially embarrass me versus do I really want a solution for this problem, is probably the biggest thing. When people get past the is this going to embarrass me part, then you get a lot of true value in what's happening. And I do my best to answer as realistically as possible. So
that makes sense, though. I could see that, where you balance, like, do I really want to bring this up in front of my guys?
Yeah, because, like,
is this important enough for me to, like, need a solution to?
I want to get into a little bit about what you do, and I mean what's paying the bills
right now? My law firm is paying the bills.
That just sound hard. In fact, that might actually be the whitest thing you've ever said to me. What's paying the bills? My law firm. Oh, shit.
So I'll give a little background for the audience if they don't know me already. Presumably, I'm assuming that a lot of your audience may never have met me unless y'all went to DePaul. So, when I say my law firm, I also have business partners. So, it's not all mine. But when I started, though, when I did branch out on my own, I did have a law firm that was my own for 2 years. And then I just joined a group last January 2017 of a group out of New Orleans. And we all practice in the technology startup world. So I have tech clients primarily building software, building applications, solving problems, building platforms like Uber or Airbnb to solve various different types of problems. So that pays the bill. I do all the transactional work, the general corporate work, their funding deals, all that stuff. I'm building something, The Grind to Greatness, which I also have a podcast with. And that's a business that I'm using as a vehicle to be able to, like, help people do kind of, in a way, kind of what it is that I'm doing. Because while I appreciate and I'm very blessed to be in the situation I'm in, while I like my clients and I like what I do, it's not really what I'm passionate about. And I know that. And I know I don't want to continue on a path and then 10 years from now I look back and say, damn, I really should have did this other thing, because I wasn't doing what I was passionate about. And so right now I'm building The Grind of Greatness is kind of a vehicle to help other people discover that for themselves too. And I'm using this technology, this membership platform that allows me to really, like, go around and have these really awesome experiences all over the world. I get paid for that. It's a membership, so I can get commission and residual income off getting members into this platform. If it's anybody who's interested in traveling, going to different events around the country or the world, but they want to do it VIP style, I'll be in Vegas next month for the official launch of this platform. So I'm using that as one vehicle to be able to help people kind of get out from behind their desks or from behind the life that they are just unsatisfied with and go out there and just live a fulfilled life. So that's it. I'm building that on the side.
So you say you're dealing mostly with like technological stuff and startups and things of that nature, right?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming a lot of this is like copyright law or internet, not internet, but
intellectual property.
Intellectual property. That's what I'm trying to say.
I do that a little bit. I have a partner that's his specialty, so. Typically, so ask me the question, I'll let you know if I can answer it. My IP stuff I send to my partner to do.
Because recently, like in the last couple of years, it was determined that a lot of what is put online, be it through Twitter or Facebook and stuff, can't be considered. Even if it's your idea, even if you have that can't be your proof that is your original idea
for
copyright or trademark or what have you, and that may have changed in the last year or so.
Is that based on like if you're putting it on a platform like Facebook?
So like if you say something on Twitter, for this is actually a direct thing that I don't know if I've ever told you, but if I do something on Twitter and it becomes a thing, and then somebody steals that thing, and then they make $1 million off of it. Like, there's no protection for that. There's nothing that I can claim. There's nothing I can say to be like, yo, you clearly just took my thing. Like, this is the thing.
You know what? That's an interesting question, because, and I'd have to look at Twitter's terms of use too, and how they deal with their user content. So like anytime a third party or a user of a system posts their own content on that system, that's user content. And typically most terms of use say that what you post on our platform, like your user content, is yours, right? That's you own that, but we have the right to use that however we want. So it really just depends on the context of who's profiting off it. Somebody,
another user that just so happened to have a network behind them.
Yeah, that is actually a very interesting question that, unfortunately, too bad for your show, that I don't know the answer to.
Yeah, no, I mean, Because typically
it's first, when you think of that, if that idea comes from you, but then also, though, you also have to think about the context depends on it too. Like, somebody can't take verbatim, like if I make a blog post, right, and I post it on Facebook, that's a third party platform, right? Somebody can't take my words verbatim and use them. Somebody can take ideas and concepts and repurpose them and recreate them into their own.
Right.
So and it really depends on how it's being done.
And I'm not looking for damages or anything like that. I just, one thing, I don't even know if I want to tell this story. So you remember when Obama ran for president, and he got inaugurated in 2009 and all of that. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a thing, it was like four or five, it was a very small group of people. Like, I know who the people are, they know who I am, small group of people. And we were making jokes about, this is the first time a black guy has ever had such a large, you know, everything he's doing is being hyper-scrutinized on such a large scale. So a lot of people may just misunderstand some very basic things that he's doing. So there became this need to translate Obama for the people who are not familiar with either how he does things or with how politics in the United States works. So there's a whole different side of people who just started voting and just started paying attention to politics because of Obama. So we went with this translating Obama, and like, it was a tag. It was a hashtag that we just, you know, if you go back, only four or five people were using that for like a year. Only four or five people had used it. It was mostly me. It's a dump of just like translating Obama and his jokes. So every time he would do State of the Union or a major speech or something like that. So Obama's anger translator winds up in this thing, sketch on Key and Peele.
Yeah.
And now the Obama, like, years go past, and eventually the Obama anger translator winds up in the final State of the, the final White House Correspondents' Dinner. And they do this whole thing.
Yeah, I remember that.
And people are like, yo, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. They stole your shit. They blatantly took it. And I was like, you're right. That's a bite. I don't know. Now, who says that they did it? I don't know. It could have been a writer. Somebody got the thing and they changed it slightly. So you could, but it was so obvious that, like, yeah, that came from my Twitter. Like, that always, always bothered me. And I had made a, I was doing a Uber, I think. And it was a lawyer in the back, and she was saying, she was talking about intellectual property and all this other stuff. And so I just asked her, and she said, no, actually, you got no right to it. You would lose even if you did care. And I was like, yeah, I don't really care, but it's just interesting. But I say I don't care, like, in as far as like looking into it and trying to get any money, I don't care about that shit. But I did care in the fact that, like, I never watched Key and Peele. Watch that. I was so pissed. I didn't watch anything to do with Key and Peele. I didn't want anything to do. And then somebody finally made me watch The Substitute Teacher. They made me watch.
Oh my God, I was just getting ready to say, you have to watch that.
That was actually funny. And I was like, okay, I can't hate these niggas no more. But I did until I seen that. And then I almost didn't see Get Out because of it, but I'm glad I saw Get Out too. So then I was just like, all right, they're not bad, but still.
And you don't know if it was like somebody could have brought that.
Right. You don't know who introduced it. Yeah. There's no telling who introduced it, but that shit, like, there was, I'm willing to bet the house. Like, that came from my Twitter.
That's funny. I didn't know that. Yeah. I unfortunately don't know enough about, like, the intricacies of IP to answer that question. And that's why I send all my IP stuff to my brother.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the question. I don't care much about it.
Interesting story though.
The other law question I have is actually much more serious and more, it doesn't have much to do with tech and things like that, but I am wondering, what can people do to kind of curb this blatant misrepresentation in the media of both white terrorists and black victims?
What can people do legally?
Is there a class action waiting to be filed on behalf of American citizens who are just at, because I feel like they put people at risk. You're further exposing
The networks, and what would their legal basis, here's when you think about any lawsuit, there's always got to be elements of every legal claim for it to even remotely have a chance of being successful. Now, each legal claim, if it's like negligence per se, there's elements of negligence that you have to be able to show to prove that negligence occurred, right? But the one thing that people miss is damages or harm in some way, and most of the time they look at it from a point of economic damages or physical harm. So if you're thinking of, like, I guess describe to me, I mean, I agree, yes, that there's like, it's, you know, what's the right word for this blatant misrepresentation, like you said.
How do I prove, other than the constant use of articles and I guess, experience after experience. I mean, there's tons of evidence, but what exactly needs to be shown that a police officer fearing for his or her life being the excuse used and the reason they get let off for killing an unarmed black person also coming from trial? Is that coming from, like, you didn't fear for your life? Take, like, dude had a gun and a vest and all this other stuff in O'Hare. He's a white boy. They arrested him. They didn't fear for their life, and he's in one piece.
Right. No shots fired. They have actual guns. They still don't get shot. Right.
Dylan Roof got taken to Burger King. No one feared for their life. They were ready to, you know, and he actually killed 9 people prior. Can I build a class action lawsuit against the New York Times for their perpetual portrayal of people of color, even victims, as horrible, terrible people, and then that same portrayal being the opposite for actual criminals being white and giving them positives? That, like, can I form a class action lawsuit proving that they are recklessly endangering the lives of American citizens, both black and white, because we're letting our guard down against potential white terrorists just because they're white, and feeling like, oh, well, that person's harmed, because we always go to that every time. Oh, look, let's ask the neighbors. What'd you think about this kid? Oh, he was a good kid. Yeah, of course, because you didn't fucking talk to him. He's building a bomb in the garage, but he's a great kid, though. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, on the flip side, it's black guy. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. And then shooting. So is there some basis there? Is there something that can be said? Not necessarily just with that, but is there something that can be done to curb that? Because I'm interested in ending that media double standard, because there's some sort of media conspiracy in America that.
Yeah. And even with the coverage levels, like, they don't cover white crimes, which are happening in every city. They don't cover those like they cover crimes happening in predominantly black neighborhoods, or crimes happening or being committed by a black person.
Exactly. People reference the myth of black on black crime when black on black crime is at the exact same percentage, more or less, than as white on white crime or any other crime, because crime 9 times out of 10 is based on proximity.
Right, exactly. I guess the question is too, because anytime you think about a class action, which you're getting outside of my wheelhouse of what I really know in the law. But I know, obviously, you know, some general basics, but when you think about your class of plaintiffs who are suing, there has to be some type of, like, shared injury that can be attributed to the class, and an injury that you can somehow quantify in numbers and money.
I ultimately would like to build a case for reparations in America, but I think it's steps. It's not the whole thing. You got to start from, well, here's one thing, and take that and move it to this thing, because it's a long history.
Not right, and one. You're talking about every single facet of our society. You're talking about, I mean, you're talking because about media. Then you're talking about how teachers treat black students versus white students when it comes to school discipline. Then you want to talk about how banks redline certain neighborhoods to prevent black people from being able to get a loan on a certain home. Mm-hmm. These houses we're not giving loans to these houses in this redline neighborhood. That automatically transfers wealth out of the hands of black people, because now they have to be renters and into the pockets of white people who own the homes. And that's the practice started going back since World War II. And you're talking about, I mean, you're, it permeates every facet of our society. That's the overwhelming part for me. When you talk about solving any of these issues, it's such a, like, when you think about what is the issue, I guess let me pose this question to you, because we're kind of going off track from your original question. But if there was one issue to tackle first for you, what would that be?
I feel like you almost have to start with police brutality. The reason is because your ability to be governed at the same as, because we all pay taxes at the same rates. It's right. Based on your money. So there is some sort of standard there.
All right. So if you're paying the same amount of taxes.
If I'm paying for the same services, I can prove very quickly that, I mean, there's got to be 1,000 cases. The only defense they'd have is that the police abuse everyone at the same rate, which is just not true, because then there's a prison industrial complex and all that, and the huge disproportionate numbers of people of color, specifically African Americans, in jail. So that's not going to be close.
And they don't use drugs at any higher rates than white people. They're just being over-policed. I mean, the police are being sent to where black people are living, and even if they don't live there, God, I know we can talk about St. Louis, but I know there are neighborhoods in St. Louis that are predominantly white, but if you go into their night court, every defendant in the room is black, because as soon as a black person crosses over the line, the police are waiting to pull them over and give them a speeding ticket or some shit like that.
That is the tried and true Midwest.
Yeah, and a friend of mine posed the question of, what if we started making police officers pay for, like, have their own insurance policies? As a lawyer, I'm required to carry malpractice insurance, because if I have negligence in my job that causes one of my clients damages, that I'm responsible for that.
Right.
And what I don't understand about the people that don't care to see this issue with police brutality curb, not just from the moral standpoint, like, I get people's levels of morals are just not on the same page. But you're like, so taxpayer dollars have to be the ones that pay out. We're the ones paying for any time that the city has to settle with a person that they abuse in a civil suit. The taxpayers have to pay for that.
Right.
And in any other profession, especially a risky profession or a dangerous profession, those professionals have to carry insurance. So rather than making the city liable for that, the actual officer himself, and whatever the insurance doesn't cover, the officer himself has to cover out of pocket.
I think there's such a large backlash, though, against that, because whenever you start talking about changing anything, there's some secret. There's a secret to conservatism. I don't know if anyone knows it, but there's definitely a secret to this. That's why they align with certain things and certain policies and things. Just like when you hear things about, we're going to bring back coal or factory jobs or these industries, and shit, that's because all these things were historically white. And right. That's why. So then it's like, okay, well, you know, over time, these were white working class, which is supposed to be, used to be synonymous with uneducated. But it's basically saying these are good jobs, good professions that I can get without having to go to school, without right. having to be smart, without having to spend any extra money. So even at the baseline of my existence, even if I just wanted to put food on the table, have a family, and not do too much, I can at least make this basic living in these industries, in these jobs. And these institutions were available and seen to be available for whites. That's why you have police officers that don't look like the communities that they police, in all 10 major cities, And I'm sure there's more than 10 major cities, but the 10 top, you know,
right,
major cities where the black people are. That's why you have this, and that exists in a number of other jobs, but none of those other jobs really do you get to carry around a gun and like hunt for people if you really want to.
Yeah, and I, now that I think about it, it's like my friend posing this is an anarchist. He is an anarchist, so he doesn't even think he hates the police because he, in the sense of, he thinks that capitalism, private security should handle. He doesn't think the militarization of the police is doing anybody any good, and that government. Telling you, like, government's ultimately taking away all of our liberties, like, you know, day by day. So his advice was, now that I think about it, is purely capitalist. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it would work if you're totally thinking about it from a capitalist standpoint of there being a private company that has to then pay the consequences.
Because, but see, the thing about American capitalism is that it's subjective and it can change based on who wants what. When it's, you know, welfare is bad unless it's corporate welfare, then it's incredible.
Well, it was also good when during FDR and poor people were white, also white. When they show like who the welfare recipients are during the New Deal, they were showing these white families with kids that were
in the breadline.
Yeah, and that they were, you know, dealing with a lot of financial troubles, but the minute they shifted that, the image of who the recipient of welfare was, then it became a problem. But if we really want to talk about welfare, I mean, white people have been the recipients of government welfare from the very start.
I mean,
the real affirmative action is white affirmative action. People don't talk about it like that, but the real recipients of all the government handouts, we're talking about what black welfare recipients have received pales from the government, pales in comparison to what white people have been handed to the government, with things that black people were excluded from.
Oh, without question. It's one of my favorite things is that last clip of Martin Luther King telling people that this is about money. This isn't about all these, like, we're coming. Basically, he ended with, it's time for black people to get their check. And, you know, he was dead like a week later.
Can't have them thinking that.
Yeah, you could think all kind of other stuff, but that can't
What happened to 40 acres and a mule?
Yeah, oh, God. And you know what? Again, that this brings us back to the question of trying to build this lawsuit for reparations, which I jokingly say that. I say if ever I on Facebook for a long time, I was building the case myself, and I was telling people, I would preface like each one of these articles or each one. I'd be like, yo, this is for when they get me. When they get me, I want y'all to have it. This is everything right here for you. So y'all know y'all can take this in and build this reparations case. We got too much evidence to lose this shit.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't see anything. I mean, when you think about the massive head start with wealth, generational wealth building alone, we're talking about just straight money and dollars, the massive head start. It's like, how on earth is there ever going to be racial equity unless there are some type of reparations? Don't think, you know, would you think in our lifetime that would happen?
I think if people make it happen, but I think that's one of the things. The things about America, though, is just I try to say the states or the U.S. because America is so much bigger than just here. But the thing about this place is that, and it goes back to the media conspiracy. They shit on so many things that could be good for large groups of people. Because it isn't necessarily always about race anymore. It used to be. And it's really not. A lot of it is about class. And the 1% of people that make all the money, control the networks, control the media, control the, like, and I'm not saying that in a like conspiracy way. I'm saying it in a, just look at which 4 or 5 media companies own which 60 or 70 channels.
There was a black kid, I think he was 17, and he was trying to buy a BB gun in Walmart, and he got killed.
Yeah, I remember.
Because until it actually, until you pro Second Amendment people actually start to give a fuck that this amendment has never applied to black people, and I don't want to hear shit.
Another one, again, the secrets behind conservatism and a lot of the, you're allowed to hide behind the Constitution or the principles of the Constitution without acknowledging the practicality of the Constitution. That's the beauty of saying you're conservative. The beauty of it is you can say, you can be all principle and no practicality. And
only when it comes to the Second Amendment, though.
Oh, shit. It comes to a lot of different things.
It sure as fuck doesn't. When you talk about the Fifth Amendment and the Fourth Amendment.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Free from reasonable search and seizure.
Yeah.
And they don't care about those amendments because the implications of those amendments are directly impacting how the police deal with black people for the most part. Well,
so the reason, like, have you ever seen Bowling for Columbine?
No.
It was a great year for America, the KKK and the NRA. Of course, they had nothing to do with each other, and this was just a coincidence. One group legally promoted responsible gun ownership, and the other group shot and lynched black people.
And the reason why so many KKK members were able to operate with impunity is because so many of them had jobs in law enforcement. So you're able to shroud your identity in secrecy and then shoot, hunt, lynch, and kill black people. And that has been for the longest time when black people are saying you can't trust the police, and they've had this. They weren't necessarily able to articulate these things, but this shit has been true for a really long time.
Well, I mean, essentially, also, I mean, that was a tactic, just one of many tactics for maintaining after slavery was illegal, right? One of many tactics for essentially maintaining slavery also is imprisonment,
and which we still have,
right? And so that's been, yeah, I mean, they've used the police in that way, not to protect and serve, you know what I mean, not to protect and serve at all in that regard.
Yeah. And but again, this is why you always have the argument. So I would challenge anyone who has these conversations with older people. If you're young and you don't get what the big deal about conservatism is, if you don't understand, you think that it's just, oh, I'm just playing. I challenge you to have that parent or that older person, whatever, to articulate their reasoning behind why these things shouldn't change after you lay out what the harm that it does to people of color. For people who can't draw the parallel, for people who can't see it, you would have to just ignore. And I know people are really good at this.
Ignoring
the
for
American
real.
History. Yeah.
I don't have faith. I do not have one iota of faith in.
But what it does, though, is when you can have the conversation level like that, when you can explain those things, and those things are taken to be based up of fact. If you force a person, hey, why is this still your decision? You will force people out of, well, because I just don't like black people. And if I know that, I'm having a much easier time navigating this society. It's easier. It's safer. It's just, hey, you don't like me. Great. Now I know not to ever turn my back on you. Now I know, you know, to not be over here and vice versa. You know, not to be on my property and shit like that. But it's the danger. The danger is the 53%.
The white women.
The white women who, the pink hats that low-key voted for Trump. That's my favorite thing. My favorite thing is the 53%, because the numbers don't lie.
Were they out there marching? Shit.
They had to be. They had to be. In order for the numbers for the march to be achieved, they had to be. Somebody,
but there was a lot of people that also didn't vote.
Right. This is true. This is true. But the concept that...
And there were men out there, too, weren't there? Or no?
I was there for a little
supporting,
bit.
Supporting women?
It was a few guys, but it wasn't a lot.
Oh, I'm sure there's some low-keys, for real, that would probably be embarrassed around their circle of friends.
I'm going to say there are way more than you...
Closeted Trump voters.
And you know what? because he said a lot of shit that, like, you know, it made sense to them at the time. It sounded good at the time. He's still a promoter.
The awareness takes constant education. You know what I mean? Hmm. So, yeah, it doesn't sound like I have a lot of time on my hands, and I don't. But I don't also watch a lot of TV. Rather than watch TV, I educate myself on things like that. Like, I'm reading Race Matters, Cornel West, because a person I admire told me that was one of his best works, and so I just wanted to check it out. But I constantly just am consuming information about things like this because it's important to me, and I haven't figured out exactly how I can take the education and do something good with that.
Tell me three things you want to change.
About
how the world works. Or maybe just how the United States works.
Well, clearly, racial equity. But where? Oh, my God. That's a question, you know, that I don't know the answer to. It would just be lovely to wake up one day and for people, I guess where I think I could do good is in getting white people to get their shit together. Because a lot of times for white people, what I've noticed is that they will dismiss the real stories and accounts of black people that are telling them they're going through this. But until a white person validates that, then they say, oh, well, wait, let me listen. And I hate that. I fucking hate white validation. It irks the shit out of me. But I also know that this is just how white people work. And so it's a necessary evil in the sense of, hey, I know black people have been telling you this thing over and over and over and over again, and you haven't been listening to them. But for some reason, when I say it, it's going to hold more weight with you.
Did you call the term white elevation?
Validation.
I thought you said white elevation. I was going to say, damn, it is snow at the top of the mountain. All right, never mind.
No. Validation.
Okay, right, validation. All right, that makes sense.
And so maybe in I'm just trying to explore, like, how can I use what I know as a white person in, because the people that hold the power are white people. Is it black people's job to fix the shit that we created? You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of how I look at it. I think that white people have a huge responsibility in making the actual real changes that need to be made to see some progress. And without that, because they're the ones holding a lot of the power and the decision making, without that, then how far can we go? And the people who created the system should take some ownership and responsibility over that. That was kind of a little bit off track of what we started talking about and what I'm doing, but I guess to wrap that up is, this is something that's always been important to me, and I'm trying to figure out where I fit in and how I can do more than just educate myself and come on podcasts and talk to people and just do something meaningful, you know, because that's the one thing, Wes, from my life that I feel is missing, is that what can I do meaningful to address an issue I really care deeply about?
That was one thing.
One. Okay. So two more. I would love to see, in general, I would love to see people evolve from I'm trying to figure out how to put this into words, but people are very they don't want to ever look within and they want to blame other people. I think we have a society that's largely, have you ever heard of the terms internal locus of control, external locus of control?
No.
Well, internal locus of control is when you believe that your behavior has consequences, right, and that you have control and power over your destiny to a degree. External locus of control is when you are like play victim, other people are responsible for where you are in your life. And there is people who believe in internal locus of control. That's how their mindset is. They're more successful because they understand that even though there are these outside forces that they might not be able to control, they look to within to see what they can control and what they can change about themselves. And I wish more people would have that type of awareness. I think people would just be better humans in general. I think that goes back to my earlier independent thought of whether I think people are genuinely good or bad. And sometimes I don't know the answer to that question because you read the comment section of any controversial Facebook post and it's really like, wow, like people are really disappointing sometimes. So I would like to see just a general shift in mindset. I think maybe that's what it is. In the whole, and then that's 2, 3. Oh, what's the third one? That's a good question, Wes.
We can only change so much. I know. I think I want regular people to have the ability to close comment sections.
Right.
That's about what? My comments are closed, fucking moron. That's right. It's over. You can't talk.
You can't or say like, no more.
Or like PTI or not PTI. What's the show with Around the Horn where I can just mute? I got to just be able to mute that guy. Like, what are you talking about, mute? We were having a very nice intellectual discussion until this asshole showed up. Mute.
Yeah, no, we need a mute button. That would be nice. Yeah, I'm going to stick to those two because I feel like I do, the grind to greatness is about number two, is about really people, like, you can't really create a certain type of lifestyle for yourself or success without those character traits. I mean, it's rare, but you have to be able to have some self-awareness and you have to be able to want to seek to always improve yourself. And I don't think a lot of people have that innately. Like they don't even try to do it. They're just content just going day by day. And so I think with the grind of greatness, I try to get people to see that about themselves to a degree. And then the other thing, I need to, recently I've been feeling a lot like, damn, I need to do more. And that's the one thing. I don't know which way and how that plays out, but that's the one thing I need. The one question I need to start answering for myself and to start taking action on.
Where can people find the Grind to Greatness?
Well, the website, thegrindtogreatness.com, on Facebook at The Grind to Greatness, Instagram at The Grind to Greatness. That's where you'll be able to find me, my podcast. If you go to my website, you can find my podcast, the link to the iTunes show. It's on SoundCloud, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher. Search in The Grind to Greatness. You can find it anywhere.
That's it for this week's Independent Thoughts. I'd like to thank our guests, Mary Hodges and resident beatmaker DTG. And of course, thank you guys for listening. If you'd like to follow along from Facebook, there's an Independent Thoughts podcast page. You can just type in at Independent Thoughts Podcast. Yeah, I know that's long as hell, but that is us. You can leave any messages there. Also, Anchor has a feature on the site that allows you to send messages. So if you guys would like to send over any thoughts or voice messages, you can do that as well, and they'll be received and posted. Make sure you check out Mary's podcast, The Grind to Greatness, and make sure you check back with Independent Thoughts next week. Peace.